You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast. Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, hello and welcome to what is the half century of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's episode 50. It's me, Stephen Darwin, and I'm joined, as I always am, by Dan and Dov. Guys, how are you doing this week?
Yeah, doesn't time fly? 50. It's quite amazing, really. I mean, spending so much time with you guys on here.
It's like we're friends or something,
eh? It is, yeah. It's emotional, Dov. It's getting emotional. It's getting that way. No, I'm fine, though. How are you, Steve?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Any particular highlights from the last 50?
I don't know, really. There's been a lot of controversy in there, but I just enjoy being a part of it.
That's good to hear, Dan. Good to hear. Tom, how you doing?
I love Dan and his footballing cliches. It's but apart from that, I'm very, very well, enjoying the sunny weather. Although it was raining a couple of days ago, shock horror, and there was thunder, and it was so strong it shook the house that I'm living in, like the flat. But you could feel the thunder like vibrating through the house. That was a bit scary.
Sounds quite cool.
Sure, yeah, it was. Would you swap it to return back to Scotland then?
Not yet, no. I'm enjoying it too much. I've nearly got a suntan as well.
I'm a big fan of lightning. I like lightning. I like watching it. It pleases me.
Fair enough. Well, it was lightning as well. There were floods in the town next to us, though, which wasn't so good. But
No, floods aren't so good, no.
that's not so good. But there's a river. There's a river halfway that runs maybe 6 months of the year, and it's been dried up since I've been there, so it's just like the riverbed. And then after a night's worth of rain, the river was back, but then it's since gone. So that's what happens when you get flash rain, I don't know.
There you go. Don't go to Italy at the moment. But well, guys, we'll get started by looking back at the only game that took place last week for us, the 0-0 draw with Sunderland on Saturday in the Premier League. Dan, what do you make of it all? Another away draw, isn't it? Fourth of the season now. We haven't won away from home yet in the league. Ferguson came out the other day and sort of said that we've lost that killer instinct in front of goal. I mean, do you go along with that? Is that a fair assessment of things at the moment?
Well, we didn't really have any chances on Saturday to have any killer instinct, did we, really? I thought we were abject, disappointing. Sunderland probably deserved 3 points on the whole, but, you know, to battle your way through a draw, kept a clean sheet. I thought Vidic played very well again, and I thought that, you know, Ferguson should really come out and just be honest and just said that we didn't, you know, we're not playing like a team like Man United should be playing.
So what you're saying there, you're making that out to be a good point rather than... Well, we keep saying it rather than 2 points lost. That was a good point.
Yeah, the way things panned out in the game, I think that we can be happy with a point. But, you know, I say every week, every time we draw away from home, I say we need to win these games if you're going to win the league, you know. But Sunderland, they've played well throughout the season, you know, against the big teams. They've got a lot of points against them. So maybe, you know, when the other big teams go up there, they'll struggle as well. But I'm not keen on the lineup that Ferguson put out anyway, especially up front.
Yeah, that would be my next question, Dov. I mean, Dan said it there. Makeda and Owen up front. Berbatov, who has just been in sparkling form, left on the bench. It doesn't really make sense, does it? When you go to a game that, I mean, I hate to question Ferguson, the great man, but no, when Sunderland, we're never going to be a pushover. So it's a bit strange to not see us play our strongest available team, really.
I think, yeah, I agree completely with that. I don't understand it at all. Michael Owen and Makeda. Well,
not even Hernandez either after his winner. We were speculating, weren't we, that he might start, and he wasn't even in either. So
yeah, then he gone. It's the fact you mentioned about Berbatov as well. It's like your best player at the moment, scoring bag loads of goals. He's in the best form of his United career. So why would you want to interrupt that rhythm that he's got? Obviously, so he's in good form. He's going at each game, enjoying it, enjoying his football and such like. And he's retired from international football. So it's not as if he's resting him just to keep him fresh or whatever. And I just don't understand it at all.
And he had obviously we're bringing him on as well. He had it in the back of his mind that he was going to use him if things weren't going right for us. So I don't see why he wasn't used at the start. But
yeah.
There you go. Because I think he did start to change the game in a way when he came on. I mean, he had a few chances, didn't he? And things started to happen up front, whereas in the first half, it just nothing was going right for us.
Yeah, I think when he takes off Michael Owen at half time, then that's he sort of knows he's made a mistake and starting Owen and Makeda as a partnership. So, right, okay, I need to change it. But it's just when you looked at it, you think, right, wait a minute, what is he doing? Like Makeda and Owen, especially after Hernandez scored, beat there, Berbatov's in great form. I know Owen got a couple the other week, but it just makes you wonder sometimes. Although one thing that maybe not the lineup that worried me so much, it was the actual post-match after the match, the post-match interview, where he said he was satisfied with a point. Now, don't get me wrong. Obviously, like Dan said, Sunderland, they're not going to be a pushover, so it's going to be a difficult match. But being satisfied with a point, I think, is a bit wrong, I would say. I don't think you should be satisfied with a point when you're a team looking to win the league and obviously you'd wrestle the title back from Chelsea, who are like 5 points ahead now as well. So
I think I'd rather him just be honest and come out and say, you know, we didn't play at our best and we're disappointed not to win the game, and, you know, at least tell the fans that they are disappointed in it. You know, obviously the players aren't going to be happy at drawing. Ferguson's probably not, you know, inside. He's going to be livid that we didn't win that game, or at least didn't play to any sort of capacity that they can play. So, you know, he's defending his players in a way, but I'd rather him just come out and just say, listen, you know, we weren't good enough and we've not been for the majority of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree completely as well.
And what do we think
on Michael Owen as well, though? I mean, to take Owen off after 45 minutes must wreck his confidence.
Mm.
You know, he's finally got that start that he's been waiting for, you know, in the Premier League. And he only gets 45 minutes in a game where he didn't really get the ball because the midfield didn't supply anything up front at all. So it's a bit of a strange one, really.
And so where is it all going to change? I mean, this is the million-dollar question, but is it just going to take an away win against anyone, really, just to get some points on the board away from home, and hopefully then things will start changing? Obviously, the Rooney thing isn't helping at the moment, him not being in form. I said to Dan, saw Dan on the weekend and we were discussing it, and I said, last season, the form Rooney was in, he got us so close to winning the league, and obviously with him being out of sorts now, it just seems like his form has been the difference at the moment.
Granted, he's such a good big player for us, but it worries me that we're so dependent on him then. That one player is out of form or he's injured or something like that, and then our form as a team just goes out the window and we can't win games and we can't finish chances off. That would be more worrying where you're so dependent on one player. And it's not as if we're a sort of mid-table side that sometimes they are dependent on one player. We're one of the biggest clubs in the world and we shouldn't be. That's more, I would say, that's very, very worrying.
But arguably, if you took Drogba out of the Chelsea team, or Drogba was completely out of form and not performing, the same with Fabregas at Arsenal, if he was out for a few games in a row. I know he's been out recently and they haven't exactly been firing on all cylinders, have they? And you saw, obviously, losing to Chelsea on the weekend, so maybe that is just what's happening at the moment, and it's something we're going to have to deal with. I don't think we're obviously not in dire straits or anything like that, but yeah, I just wonder if that is the thing that's causing the problems at the moment, the draws away from home. But
I've just got to say as well, like another thing about the weekend's game that sort of not shocked me, but just made me think a lot of it, was the fact that you've got like the midfield again. It's just the set of midfield. Fletcher and Scholes were in the middle. Scholes wasn't having a particularly good game, and Fletcher neither he having a good game either. It seems that, like, and Dan mentioned as well, the lack of creativity. It seems just like that if Paul Scholes isn't on form, then there's absolutely nothing coming from midfield from anybody, which I get is another worrying point. And even then, if you looked at the bench, the midfield option was Darren Gibson, and that was it. I think he had Bebe, Hernandez, and Berbatov along with a couple of defenders as well. I mean, that again is another thing. You're thinking, wait a minute, he's got seven subs there, and he's got one recognised midfielder. I mean, it's got to be something he's got to look at, or like, was he just thinking in the summer, wait a minute, we'll be fine, we've got enough midfielders.
Well,
and then,
no, I was just going to say, he's mentioned that he's looking, he's inside United. He mentioned about maybe bringing back Cleverley in January because he's on loan at Wigan at the moment. But do you think someone like that? I mean, do you expect him to get games if he gets called back in the Premier League, or is that just a sort of plan to get him in amongst the reserves and in first team training sort of thing and get him more involved in the club? Or is that realistically what could be what we're needing? Someone who's just going to play off the front two and try and create things and get things going up there?
We need someone who's not scared to make an impact on a game. It seems to me like Anderson's under a bit of pressure at the moment and Fletcher's not in the best of form, and it's only Paul Scholes who's playing really well, I think, out of our midfielders, and obviously Nani if you class him midfielder or you know, attacker. But you know, if Cleverley came into the midfield in a game like, you know, against Sunderland, I reckon that he'd want the ball, and I bet he'd try and take people on. He'd try the pass that the other ones might not do because they're not as confident or anything. I think it just needs that spark. I'm not saying he's going to provide it, but that's what the team misses at the moment, just a bit of bravery, I think.
It's interesting that he's been trying Anderson just off the front pair as well, and the front man. It seems like that he's now desperately trying to sort of convert him into that. Well, not convert him, because that's what he came as, a attacking fielder.
Yeah,
exactly.
Convert
him back.
Yeah, I mean, back. Some of the you know, the videos that you see of Anderson playing for Porto are pretty special. You know, and back in Brazil as well, he's taking players on. He's jinking past people, left, right foot, bottom corner, top corner, he does everything. But we've not really seen much of that at United. And that is down to Ferguson, you know. I mean, he came as probably more of an attacking midfielder, and then he's been, you know, moulded into... I think Ferguson's tried to make him into an all-round midfielder, you know, get up and down, box to box. But it's not quite happened yet. I know he was injured last season for the majority, and that probably didn't help his progress and his development. But Ferguson now has got to look at the structure of the team and see where Anderson fits in.
Do you think he maybe done that on purpose then? Do you think maybe he thought, right, okay, we've got a guy who's fantastic going forward, but for the Premier League, he maybe needs to be a bit more robust in his sort of tackling, his challenging, and his defensive positioning to help out the team. So we'll make him play this one role where he's a sort of defensive-minded midfielder, battling, etc. And then maybe in a year or two later, when he's learned that, we'll then sort of move on a bit further forward, where obviously his natural talents will come to the fore, plus he'll have that then added quality of some sort of defensive structure in his game as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Ferguson will want the best player he can get for the club. He wants a bit of variety. He wants a player to be able to play in a variety of positions. You know, and if Anderson does develop into an all-round midfielder, you can play him off the front two, you can play him off the front one, you can put him in a three-man midfield, in a two, you can put him as a sitting midfielder, you know. I'm sure he could do an alright job on the left-hand side if required. But I think more point, I mean, I think it was trying to set a bit of discipline about him. I mean, I know I've not seen a lot of videos from him from when he used to play, but what I have seen, he was very sort of individual and off the cuff sort of thing, and you can't really do that all the time at United. You have to have some sort of discipline as well within your formation and your tactics, which might not happen over in Brazil or in Portugal as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as one another thing about Anderson as well, sticking with him, is the amount of criticism he's received in the last couple of games. A lot of people were just saying that it was terrible against Sunderland, and no, he doesn't deserve to beat United and stuff like that. And I'm just sitting reading these things on forums and other websites and things like that, thinking the guy's been out for, I can't remember, it was nearly a year I think he was out for, and he's hardly played. And it's two games back and you're just saying he's rubbish. And I don't understand. I think he's a good player. Just give him a month or two to get his form back and get fitness back, and then see what he can do if he's playing in his more favourite position. But it just makes me wonder sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he showed glimpses against Sunderland. I thought he did all right. He was running from midfield with the ball quite a bit, you know, quite bullishly. And just sometimes his passing lets him down a little bit. But as I said to Steve, I think he'll be a good player for the future of United. You know, I think you've got to get behind players like that, and just you've got, well, essentially you've just got to have belief and hope that they're going to, you know, develop under, you know, one of the best managers in the world at the moment, and one of the best coaching setups as well. He can't really fail unless he's not motivated to do it.
Completely agree, Dan. Completely agree.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
And, well, from one end of the pitch to the other, Edwin van der Sar is, well, Eric Steele, the United goalkeeping coach, he's come out recently and said that it's looking like he might retire at the end of the season. Dan, it's a little bit sudden, really, I suppose, but although van der Sar's obviously getting on, I mean, you sort of hope he'll just go on forever, don't you, really? But then it does sort of dawn on you that we are going to have to find someone else, or is Thomas Cusack, I mean, we've discussed this before, but is Cusack ready to take on that responsibility and starting from next season? Would you have enough trust in him, faith in him, to be the number one?
Short answer, no. I don't think that he's. I don't think he's good enough to be United number one. You know, in every game of the season, you know, Europe and Premier League. I think it only takes one little mistake, and obviously all the fans will be on his back as well. But I just don't. And I appreciate he's a very good goalkeeper, but I just don't think he has that aura and that presence about him that makes you think, yeah, he's our number one, and no one's gonna, you know, displace him unless he has an absolutely horrific, you know, run of form. I know he played well last season when he came in, and credit to him for that. But I just think there's certain elements of his game that need to improve if he's going to do it.
Dov, if Cusack isn't the man, I mean, who realistically do you think we should be looking to bring in as, well, hopefully being our next keeper for a long, long time?
Yeah, well, I know we've been linked with David De Gea, the Atletico Madrid, that you're quite a fan of him, Steve. Another guy is Stekelenburg at Ajax, who's been linked. Then you've got Hugo Lloris as well. And I forget the guy's name, the guy that's in Denmark. It's Lindegaard, I think it is. He's another one we're apparently looking at as well. So he's definitely looking at keepers. It's just whether or not who you're going to get in. I mean, I know Stekelenburg, you... a lot of people... Oh, you go down, sorry.
No, I'm just saying, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Would you go for a younger goalkeeper that's going to sort of develop into a world-class one, or would you go for someone who's sort of an already established name? You know, I'll throw someone out there, like Buffon, you know. Or if Casillas became available tomorrow, obviously you'd try and get him, wouldn't you? But or would you go for like a younger keeper like De Gea?
I think it depends on the player's character and mentality, really, because I think I always got the impression with Foster, as much as I rated him as a sort of out-and-out shot stopper, I just don't think mentally he was the right sort of keeper to be able to deal with the pressures of playing for a top club. Whereas someone like Joe Hart, for instance, I mean, there's an aura about him, isn't there? He's got so much confidence and belief in his ability that he seems to be able to deal with anything. Even if he makes a mistake, he'll shrug it off and he'll be completely focused for the next game. And De Gea, I mean, again, he looks a fantastic sort of shot stopper and a fantastic goalkeeper, but I don't think we know enough sort of about his mentality and things like that. But if that's more or less good enough, I don't see why he shouldn't be the sort of ideal target, because he looks like he's going to be, well, after Casillas goes, which is probably still, what is he now, 28, 29?
It's another 10 years.
Exactly, so he's probably... Got a while to wait yet before he gets that Spain jersey, but I think when his time will come, and it will be him.
Well, the thing is, like you said, for getting a younger keeper as well, I mean, what happened, like, the same sort of thing happened with Schmeichel. It took so long after he retired to get another number one as such. Obviously, you had Bosnich, Taibbi, Barthez, before like Van der Sar came along. Arguably, we should have got him before he went to Fulham. But obviously he's established himself as the number one. But then if you're going to buy an experienced keeper, you might only have them for 3, 4, maybe 5 years maximum. And whereas if you're a younger guy, you've got your guy who could arguably be there for 10, 15 years, which is something you'd rather have.
Well, the thing is, if you buy a young goalkeeper, though, say, you know, and they make a few mistakes in the first season, you're almost writing him off straight away. Well, I know most fans probably would, and they think they wouldn't be good enough for the rest of the, you know, career at United. So I don't know, personally, I'd rather go for someone with a bit more experience, especially, you know, seeing as, you know, Touchwood are going to be in the Champions League most seasons, you know, looking to get to the later stages of that and looking to, you know, win the league. I think we need a keeper that's...
But But then where do they come from? I mean, you mentioned Buffon there, but Casillas isn't going to leave Real, surely. Someone like Victor Valdes won't leave Barcelona. And this is the unique thing you have with a goalkeeper, because there's only that one slot, isn't there? You can't possibly have two or three goalkeepers and rotate them throughout a season. So the point I'm trying to make there is that with a young and up-and-coming goalkeeper that looks like he's going to be the next big thing, I mean, teams like Real Madrid, Barcelona, they're not looking for a goalkeeper. So I think now is the sort of time to go for it and bring someone in that we feel can develop.
Can establish himself, yeah.
World-class keeper.
Yeah, well, like a couple of ones, like the younger guys, like Lloris, I think is 23, and he's actually said he won't leave Lyon until he feels he's complete, in the worst case. He wants to be as good as he can be with Lyon before he moves on. De Gea, I don't think he'd leave Atletico Madrid. Stekelenburg, another one, but he replaced Van der Sar on the Dutch side, so he's another good one. Buffon, as good as he is, and I still think when he's fit, he's the best keeper on the planet. He's had loads and loads of injury problems, and he's out until the new year just now. So I think you're getting a guy who comes in, it'll be fantastic when he plays, but he won't play every week. So that's a position you need to get right as well, because they can change games. They can win you 10, 15 points in a season. And we've seen what happened when we had like Bosnić and Taibbi, and made a few mistakes, and that was it. Like when Taibbi came to the club, I think he played 4 games, got man of the match in 2 of them, but because he made a couple of errors in the other 2, that was it. His career was finished.
It's certainly something that's going to become really, really intriguing when sort of Van der Sar does confirm that it's definitely going to be his last season.
I mean, we're not ruling out Ben Amos, are we, already? I mean, he's a player that could step into the first team squad and, you know, get a few friendlies next season and prepare himself for the first team, or is it too early for someone like Amos?
Well, the fact is that Ferguson as well, he's the sort of manager where he'll give someone a chance, and if he's sort of promised something to Kuchak and sort of said to him, look, you stay around and you will get a chance to show that you're good enough, it could be next season that it's going to be Kuchak's the number one and Amos is the number two.
Yeah, so, and also, I'm going to keep running with it, the money factor as well, because we're not exactly flush, and who says we've got 10, 15, 20 million pounds to spend on a top-class keeper? It might just be that he'll have to give Kuchak a go as number one, because Kuchak's already said if he doesn't get a go as first-choice keeper, he'll leave. He said he'll have to do the same things Foster done to keep his place in the Poland squad. So
Valid point. We'll have to see what happens with that.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net. Or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
We'll move on to Club Cabbage and Player of the Week now then. Dan, who would be your Player of the Week first?
That's a tough one, isn't it, with just a Sunderland game? I don't know, really. I thought that Rio had a good game again. And I thought that Vidic was probably good as well. So I think I'll go with Nemanja Vidic.
Dov, what about you for this week?
Dan stole the guy I was going for. It's terrible. I'll give it to Rio then. I thought both central defenders were quite good, and it was a nice sort of Cameron influence as well at the back. Although it was nice to see Vidic keeping the captain's armband as well. So yeah, a bit of Rio Ferdinand for me. What about you, Steve?
Oh, it's tricky. I think I'll give it to Raphael. Thought he did okay once again, back in the side. Seems like he's getting some confidence now as well with a couple of run of games. But no, it was really difficult, wasn't it? Because it was so sort of uninspiring. But I'll take Raphael. What about Cabbage then, Dov? Start with you.
Can I give it to Sir Alex Ferguson? generally for one, the team he put out, and then his post-match comments, which were uninspiring and abject and just generally pathetic after the game. I would like to just give it to him.
I bet he's not used to hearing words like that used against him. But Dan, what about you, Cabbage?
I think I'm going to go with Makeda. I don't think he played very well at all. He showed little glimpses again, like Anderson did, but you know, he didn't make most of his opportunities to start. It was between him and Owen, probably. But I don't like criticising Michael Owen, because I think that he's been unfortunate, you know. Especially to come off at half-time, like I said before. But I think Makeda, I thought he was worse than Owen in the first half. So yeah, Makeda.
I'm going to go for Nani, I think, just because I think he's the go-to guy at the moment, really, with Rooney out of form. And obviously with Berbatov being on the bench, I think he could have really stepped forward and shown his quality. But unfortunately, it didn't quite happen for him. I don't think it was a dreadful performance by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, I think he was one of the worst out of the lot. So Nani for me.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Not a great result for the first team this week, but without the reserves playing, we did have a youth team game, Dov, so hopefully some positive news to come from that.
Yes, the under-18s played in the Academy Premier League, and it was a 3-2 victory for United, with the winning goal coming at the 94th minute, thanks to a penalty. So it's 3 points, but just 3 points. I shall let everybody know a little bit about the game. Basically, this game was probably a tale of two penalty decisions, and it was thanks to Will Keane that we got the winner in the 94th minute. One of the Blackburn defenders actually handled a Michael Formasia volley in the box, which gave us the penalty. Although we should have had a penalty not long, a bit before that, 89th minute, after John Coffey was hacked down in the 89th minute, but it wasn't given. We came twice from behind against quite a strong Blackburn side. Although they went ahead 4 minutes into the match, Jamie McLaren, he beat Sam Johnson from point blank range after a long throw from the right, was flicked on. But then Ravel Morrison, he had a low strike on 28 minutes to level the match. Then Blackburn, they had some pressure on us. They went back in front. The United keeper made a good save, but they were given a shot by Anthony O'Connor, who managed to get Blackburn ahead then. But Paul Pogba, he sort of decided to take it upon himself to get an equaliser for United. He went on a lovely run, but obviously what a sliding tackle by James Knowles stopped that. Well, basically United didn't get an equaliser, not straight away anyway. And Blackburn, they had a chance to go 3-1 up. When John Todd, he curled a shot that just went inches wide of the left-hand post. That would have been Blackburn 3-1 up then, and obviously it would have been game over then. Although, then Paul Pogba, he put off, so he got United back level at 2-2. Blackburn gave the ball away, and then Larnacor, he capitalised on that, and he teed up Pogba, who's their first time shot in the top right-hand corner, went in. So that was 2-2 after 76 minutes. And he nearly got another from a free kick. But it went just wide. Then, like I mentioned before, there was a last-ditch tackle on John Coffey, but it wasn't given a penalty for that, and that was in the 89th minute. And then, obviously, we got the one in the 94th minute, and Will Keane slotted home to make it 3-2. So, a last-gasp victory, but a victory nonetheless, which is very good to see from the young lads. And a couple of good performances there from Will Keane and Paul Pogba. In particular as well, who was fantastic on the day.
Great stuff. That's good to hear. Good stuff. Well, with it being International Week, obviously no game next week for United, but we will be back next week to look back at some of the international fixtures. Might even throw in a loan watch as well to look back at some of the players that are out on loan at the moment, see how they're getting on. And of course, we'll be previewing West Brom at home in the Premier League for next weekend. So do make sure you come back for episode 51 of the RedCafe.net podcast next week. And do remember, you can email us, podcast@redcafe.net. Make sure you join the Facebook group if you haven't done that already. And we'll see you again next week.